Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Scope. It's a brand new year. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm your host, David Tolman.
And I'm Siobhan Yuguhan, your other host. We're very excited to be here again in this 2020.
We have an awesome guest today. It is Michael Rivers, who is just finishing up his presidency at the DPA. It was a crazy year to be president. In our conversation, we talk about all the initiatives that the DPA took to navigate COVID-19, as well as some of the new advancements that he foresees digital pathology going through in the coming years, given his position leading a digital pathology company at Roche.
Definitely was a great conversation, and I think it's going to be very informative for everybody to hear from the president, from the acting president, when all this happened in digital pathology. Was definitely a very happening year, and I think this is going to be a very, very good interview.
I hope you guys enjoy our conversation with Michael Rivers. Let's get to the show. Hey, Michael, welcome to the podcast. We were just talking about how we just started this podcast. Did you ever think that digital pathology was going to have a podcast dedicated to it?
Not necessarily, but I'm really excited that we do. So, I mean, first of all, David, Giovanni, thank you so much for doing this. I think it's important, and this is an awesome medium to use to talk about digital pathology. So excited to be here.
And actually, we've been kind of thinking about this for probably over a year. And in all during this period, some other podcasts have popped up around the same topic, which is great. Sure. Because that only talks about, you know, how much demand and how much people want to know about what's going on. So yeah, it's not only one podcast. There are many of them, and of course there's the space for everybody who wants to come and share their experiences. So yeah, we're very happy. I'm very happy to have you today, Michael. This is our podcast number 3.
Yeah. It's funny because not only are we going to have great guests like you, but we've even like had emails flying around about doing crossover podcasts already. So we're just really excited. Man. We're really excited about all the content that's going to come out this year. But Michael, we always like to ask our guests first, just tell us a little bit about your background and how that led you to a career that's focused on digital pathology.
Sure, absolutely. Appreciate that. I'll just give you the high level version. But I've been with Roche Diagnostics for about 15 years, and spent that whole time in our tissue diagnostics division. First 10 years of my career with Roche was in Tucson, Arizona, with at the time a small company called Ventana Medical Systems that was acquired by Roche back in 2008. You may remember. And so I worked in various parts of that business, primary staining automation, companion diagnostics. But 5 years ago, I had the opportunity to come out here to the Bay Area and kind of lead our digital pathology group. And so that's been super exciting. I jumped at the chance to do that. We have a really, I think, talented and diverse team of folks that are just kind of working on building very innovative and full digital pathology portfolio.
Around the time that you transitioned to leading the current group focused on digital pathology, like, was there some kind of signal or that was like, now's the time to go, fully forward with digital pathology? Like, what went into that decision and formation of your team?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think most people that will be listening will know that digital pathology in some form or fashion has been around for decades, right? And so, and I'll be honest, even 5 years ago, we were having some pretty serious internal discussions about is now the time or not, because there have been many starts and stops with this technology along the way. So, I think it was still a little tentative then, but there was no doubt that the promise and potential was clear. And we saw the opportunity not only on the hardware side, but on the AI, technology really maturing. And I think today there's absolutely zero question of the impact that digital pathology is going to have. So it still remains a super exciting place to be.
Absolutely. And then the COVID-19 came along.
Yes.
And found you as the president of the DPA.
Yeah.
So what a legacy. Talk about timing, right? So can you tell us, describe to us one of the very well-known initiatives of the Digital Pathology Association, along with the College of American Pathologists, was to work in this waiver, allowing pathologists to do remote sign out and join our colleagues, clinical colleagues who were already doing home visits or consults from their own homes via virtual platforms, and the radiology colleagues that, of course, have been able to work from home for over a decade now. But for us, that was completely new. So walk us through that process. How did that happen?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question. And you're right. It's been an amazing 12 months, in so many ways, and so many kind of surprises and unlooked for challenges, for sure. I first have to say, I am so honored and proud to work with an organization like the DPA with so many tremendous professionals that are really not only dedicated and passionate about digital pathology, but also I think showed a lot of agility last year. Because to your question, we actually had one of our face-to-face board meetings at USCAP last year in March in Los Angeles. This was the last time I traveled. I don't know about many others, but I think that was true for many others as well. Some people had already chosen to not come to that meeting, but most of the board was present, and we had our board meeting and we talked about the strategy for the year, little knowing that all of that was gonna be kind of turned on its head in a matter of just a few days. And I have to say, just to your direct point about the remote pathology, we had our executive committee get together right after some of the initial shelter in place orders. So this was kind of mid-March, early March, just after that face-to-face meeting. And we have some wonderful pathologist leaders on our executive committee that really brought this issue front and center to us. And we just all agreed, hey, we have to pivot. We have to redirect our attention and some resources from the DPA directly to this issue. And so we did. You may recall, we had a number of initiatives. We issued a memorandum to CMS to help make our case. We worked with an advocacy group to reach out directly to CLIA, the CLIA committee, CLIAC. We alerted medical trade press and so forth, and just attempting to kind of bring light to this issue and help move things forward in a positive way. You're also right, Giovanni, many other groups, CAP and others, were highly engaged in this. And thankfully, there was quick action and this waiver was issued. But very proud of the leadership for, I think, embracing the challenge, pivoting quickly, and taking it on.
Do you think that a lot of organizations have taken advantage of the waiver?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think some have. I think there's still opportunity for others to do more there. It certainly, it certainly removes a key barrier from out of the way. I think there's still some concern of, okay, well, what happens after the pandemic? What is that going to look like? And so we remain engaged to try to make that permanent. And that continues to be a real focus of the DPA, to just kind of remove those obstacles more permanently. But it certainly helps us.
It was supposed to be, it still is, a temporary measure.
That's right.
But at that point, we all were very surprised of how quickly that answer came. Yes. And we were able to do it because, personally here at the Ohio State University, we started taking advantage of that on day one. The following day after that was made public, or chair and vice chair sent a message saying that we were going to be validated, and everybody who could do the validation, that same in the next 24 hours, could start choosing to stay home. And we were thinking, okay, this is marvelous, but it's go away as soon as the pandemic is gone. Thinking about, I don't know, a couple of weeks, maybe
right.
a couple of months. But here right. we are, almost a year later.
Yes.
How do you see the future in terms of this waiver? Do you think they're going to come back after a year and say go back, or what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. And boy, I wish I was really good at prognosticating around regulatory body decisions and so forth. I'd be pretty popular around our place. I think it's a great question. And you're right. At that time, I think everybody was thinking in, you know, weeks, maybe months, certainly not the time frame that we're now kind of living with and working under. I think what was encouraging is the FDA came very shortly after that with their own kind of enforcement direction around digital pathology to kind of support this on the industry side. And what we're doing as a DPA, I know we're not going to be able to control the timing of when these bodies make different decisions, but what we are doing is we're working on a real world data study. So this was something that wasn't even in view for us at the beginning of last year, but we're really directing a lot of resources to now collecting real-world evidence from institutions and labs that are utilizing this to try to support and build the case for permanent, kind of removal of these enforcement challenges, regulations.
How can organizations get involved and contribute to the real-world data initiative?
Yeah, that's a great question, David. And we have been putting out requests for people to get involved, but certainly I would just encourage anybody who's interested, contact the DPA. We can get you in touch with Esther Obels is the head of our regulatory task force, and she's kind of spearheading this data study. But absolutely would love to talk to anybody interested in contributing to that. And I think the broader the input we can have for that, the more powerful it'll be in making that case.
Are we still planning to have our next meeting virtual? What do you think at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question too. I will say as well, one of the things that I'm really proud of looking back last year is the ability of our Pathology Visions committee to again pivot and consider a virtual meeting. Now it looks like a no-brainer, but at the time, a lot of us were really concerned. Is this gonna work? Does this make sense? Is anybody gonna come? And we had actually our highest attendance ever. We had over 500 people join that meeting. A lot of great content, and content, what's very cool about it, that content's still available. Right. So it's still on demand and available to peruse. And for somebody like me that's needs to hear it a couple of times sometimes, that's great. And so I think to directly answer your question, we are planning on an in-person meeting. We're hoping for an in-person meeting next fall. And so that's planned for Las Vegas. We have a contract. We're ready to go. I think we will likely have some kind of hybrid, offering though, or some kind of electronic content as well, just because I think there's value in that. And we have to be ready for whatever's going to come. Yeah, right?
I really like the idea of how the content was presented this year, because so I attended Pathology Visions, and in my experience attending conferences, I'm usually bouncing around from room to room like crazy, sure. trying to see all the, I have like my program, I have all the talks that I want to go to highlighted, and this one's happening at 11:45, the other one's happening at 11:50. I want to get to I want to see the introduction of this one. Can I make it to the conclusion of the other one? It was nice to be able to take a breath on my own time, review yes. the talks that I wanted to talk to, and then the interactive sessions were more question oriented, which I thought was, I feel like there's always should be more time allotted for questions at these things.
Yeah. And we really tried to, make some kind of live interactions to increase the engagement. I think that's the challenge of the fully virtual approach, is just how do you replace that in-person networking and the value of that you get at these meetings. But you know, these we're so lucky to have these incredible platforms to be able to leverage in the time of COVID. You know, you can imagine if this was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it'd be a totally different proposition. So I think we'll continue to advance this and figure out the best way to engage with everybody that wants to be part of it.
So the waiver and the virtual conference were just two major advancements that highlighted your presidency. Are there any other advancements that you're particularly proud of that you want to plug or shout out from your term in a very, very interesting year?
From my term, I love it. I think, first of all, look, I appreciate the way you framed the question. I have to tell you though, it is not at all about me. We have got such a great group of committed folks that, all of our committee activity is volunteer and volunteer led, as you know. And I think that the two other things that I would highlight, the DPA has always been really focused on education. And I think this year we made continued strides there. We had six webinars. We did have six webinars, high value webinars with great content, great participation. We continue to put position papers, content papers together to just support folks that are bringing on a DP. We also launched this DAPA, this online repository of images. We have 300 plus people signed up to get into this repository, assist them with their training and so forth. So I think some really nice strides in education. And overall, our membership increased by over 25%. We have over 2,000 members now. Again, that's a real testament to the work of that committee and the group that they did there. But I'm just excited to see the engagement. And I just take that as validation of this being the time for DP. So exciting to see that even in a time when people are, thinking about other things and distracted by the pandemic and everything else, to see still some attention going to this was really cool.
Something else that came during your tenure, a podcast from the DPA.
Of course, how could I fail to mention that? We talked about that up front, but Giovanni, that is one of the highlights for sure, the new DPA podcast. I love it. I love it. And I'm excited to be part of it, even in the third episode.
So much more planned for the rest of the year.
I think it's started as a sort of a crazy idea, right? Let's do something, but now we have so many things to talk about, so many interesting people, so many people who want to be in it. And I think there is a purpose, and we probably kind of are still trying to find, the best format, the best way to do it, to keep it interesting. So it's a work in progress. And as you said, we're happy to be where we are and to keep moving.
I mean, just one more comment on that. I have to say, and just to recognize the both of you, I think this is one of the beauties of the DPA. We really are member led. And here the two of you have kind of a passion around this and an interest. And you've got a podcast that for the DPA. And I would just encourage anybody out there listening, if you see opportunities for things that we need to do. One of the other things we did last year is we have now launched a new task force around market access and reimbursement. We think that's an important focus for the DPA going forward. So we put that together and we're actively seeking members for that. So it's an evolving kind of dynamic organization that really goes where the members think it needs to go. So you see opportunities for this, you grab it, and kudos to you two for leading us in this podcast. I love it.
One of my favorite things about the DPA is the way that industry and the academic organizations collaborate. I think that's incredibly important to the advancement of this industry. You're representing the industry, the technology side in your day-to-day. Yes. So we've talked about now is the right time for digital pathology. So what are some things that companies should be doing right now to help advance digital pathology adoption?
Yeah, I appreciate that question, David. And I continue to be motivated and excited by the technology innovation that I see happening, both on the, again, on the scanner side and the AI side. That's happening and companies are doing that. They should keep doing that. But to your point around the uniqueness of the DPA, and I share your feeling there, that's one of the reasons I love it is we have these industry representatives. We also get to work with wonderful scientific and medical professionals and kind of work together to advance this. And so, I mean, the answer I would give to your question, I'd like to think about the things that we can collaborate on and do together. And I think one of the things that is so important for DP to advance is, you know, just continue to work on interoperability and standards and so forth. DICOM, for instance, is, I think, super important. There's been a lot of work in embracing that as an image standard. And the connectathons that we've been doing as part of Pathology Visions, just working collaboratively to show that we can take an image from a scanner or that scanner or any scanner and bring it in through a workflow and ultimately into an archive or a PACS. I think that is super important. And that's going to be critical for many of those institutions out there that are looking to adopt. They need to know that, hey, we can use these pieces almost interchangeably and have a solution that is maybe not fully future-proof, but somewhat future-proof. I think every institution out there is thinking, how do I invest in digital pathology? How do I adopt digital pathology? And there's a lot of fear about what if I make the wrong decision and get stuck with something that I can't update and so forth. So I think working collaboratively on interoperability and making this work seamlessly in a workflow that is going to be appealing to pathologists, I think that's super important.
For an organization that's looking to take the leap and start a digital pathology program, what do you think the first thing that they should invest in should be?
Oh, that's a great question. So I like that. I would, not to be tongue in cheek, but I would invest in a DPA membership, first of all. And I would spend some time getting to know some of these. Seriously, I think it's important to get a lot of information and really network and understand what's out there and what other people are doing and how they're doing it and so forth. As you know, many labs have bought a scanner and maybe they're using it a little bit here and there. It's sitting in the corner or whatever. I think you really need to think through, why am I doing this? Where ultimately do I want to go? And think through the different pieces that are going to contribute to that solution. An AI algorithm by itself isn't going to do you anything. It's got to be in a clinical workflow. It's got to be associated with the right scanner. So you just got to think through those different pieces and then plan your investments accordingly.
I love that answer. I think I wasn't expecting it. I thought it was going to be something, you know, like some sort of equipment of some sort. But I think you nailed it, because probably the most important thing is the human factor, to have somebody who knows about it, who has experience, who is very enthusiastic about the concept and about the future. And the DPA offers not only one, but many of those, probably the best.
It does.
Of those. So that's probably the best way to start.
Yeah, and when you see successful implementations, you know, worldwide, I don't care where you go, there's always a champion at the center of it somewhere, or multiple champions that have really embraced it and are committed to making it work.
And you're right. Because there is no path for this. You know, we are opening the path as we move.
We're trailblazing. Yeah.
There are no books. There are some papers written, but I think most of the experience right now is an anecdotal. So the best way to be informed is to be having exchanges with the people who are currently doing it. Yeah, so you can avoid mistakes and learn from their experiences.
Excellent. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So what are you most excited about the future of digital pathology?
Yeah, I mean, I remain excited by the belief that tissue diagnostics is going to fundamentally transform. This is going to become a fully digitized workflow. I have no doubt about that at all. And that brings with it, I think some people are a little afraid of the change that can come with that, but I'm super excited about just the opportunities that will come from digitizing that workflow and then being able to apply these amazing AI tools that will bring new medical value insights for patients ultimately, and change the standard of care. So I think when I think about what I'm excited about, it's these innovations and really bringing them to life. I mean, every year we see at places like Pathology Visions, you know, it's amazing new technology. And it's all kind of in the research space. I'm excited to see it come into the clinical practice. And I think that's going to happen very soon.
Excellent. So, well, I think we are running out of time. So how about one last message for everybody listening to us today in this world of pathology going digital? Goodbye words.
Well, I would just say, and I think it's happening already, I would say get involved. There's an opportunity for everybody to get involved. This is, how many times in your life do you get to be part of a fundamental transformation of a key area of medicine that will really impact patient lives? And that's what I see here. I see the AP lab transforming. We're going to look back in, I don't know, 10 years, 20 years and say, oh yeah, we were part of this. We made it happen. You all listening can get involved. There's plenty of opportunities, whether it's with the DPA or with your various institutions, but I would just encourage you to get involved and be part of it. It's going to be exciting.
Okay, Michael, thank you so much for being our guest today. And thank you so much for all that you did during your term as presidency. I know it was a team effort, but just organizing and leading the effort in just an absolutely crazy year. Given the circumstances, we've found a lot of silver linings in this industry.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, David and Giovanni. And thank you for launching this podcast in a crazy year. You did it. And it's exciting. I'm really excited to see what is coming in the future with it.
Well, we did have to keep up with the times because I think everybody launched a podcast in 2020. So DPA had to do it too.
Absolutely. You're doing it well. It's awesome. I look forward to seeing what is coming.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.